Okay, and I hope this is more interesting than the title promises. I have nothing to disclose. Okay, we know that there have been many investigations of disparities by race, ethnicity, in the treatment of cardiovascular diseases. That's one of the big areas that's been looked at for quite a lot. These are especially pronounced in the high-tech, the newer procedures, the more intense procedures. And this is a quote from an editorial in Circulation magazine. We've long known that disparities in the delivery of cardiovascular care are pervasive and harmful. So that's what we know about racial ethnic disparities. Now, there are health disparities by race ethnicity, certainly. They're profound. They're very, very important. There are also disparities by many other factors. However you can slice and dice people, you can find disparities. So, you know, you get it by immigration status, by language, by gender, by sexual orientation, by almost any way that people are different. So I'm a gerontologist, and one of the areas I'm interested in is people with dementia. And I did my doctoral work several years ago in a place that looked at recovery from hip fracture. And we knew that people with dementia were getting less pain medication than people without dementia for similar things. So people with dementia were not having their pain probably adequately addressed relative to people without dementia. So I started being interested in, as well as racial ethnic disparities, also disparities by cognitive status. So looking at this, there have been several studies of provision of medication for people by dementia status. Most of these are done on institutionalized folks. And most of them have indeed found that they get less medication. So this is something I did in my postdoc studies. We were looking at actually provision of dementia medication among people who had dementia. And we found that racial ethnic minorities were about 30% less likely to receive medication for dementia, given that they had dementia. So we were casting around with the same data set, looking at a number of other things, including provision of cardiovascular medication. We also looked at antipsychotic medication and also looked at antidepressive medication. And what we found was actually there did not seem to be a lot of disparities when you look at medication for cardiovascular illnesses. However, it looked at this point like racial ethnic minorities were getting less antidepressant treatment by medication, but more antipsychotic treatment. And that's something I had to leave in my postdoc, and I haven't been able to look at much since. But the limitations of this, where we were only looking at 3 years of data at this point, we're just looking at the group with dementia. So we could not compare that. We couldn't look at a dementia, at a cognitive status thing, because we only had half of the group. So the thing I found interesting in trying to think through this thing about racial ethnic minorities being treated less if they had dementia, we were trying to think that through, and several things came up. And one of them is, okay, there are differences in diagnosis, whether or not you're going to get diagnosed. We don't know for sure about, it seems like the incidence is higher in minorities, but that is not fully understood. Type of dementia, and certainly treatment of dementia, these, we know that there are disparities around all those things. And we know that there are cultural factors that differ around whether somebody with dementia is, how soon they're identified and all of that kind of stuff. So I got very interested in knowing, is there maybe some kind of interaction for treatment of other things with dementia? I mean, are people and one dementia status more likely to get treated than other dementia status? So that got to be my interest in this. So we had two research questions going into this, and one is, would we identify a racial ethnic disparity? Would we recognize a cognitive status disparity? And the last question was, and is there an interaction? So we were using the Medicare Current Beneficiary Survey. I love this. As an epidemiologist and something of a social epidemiologist, I like this data set because most of the stuff we get to use, I'm in a pharmacy school, and most of the stuff we get to use looking at pharmacoepidemiology, we don't know anything about the people. We're lucky if we've got an age and a gender, much less a race. If you have race, you don't know if it's self-identified race or whether it's ascribed race. So I love this particular data set because these are folks that are in for 3 years and they are interviewed 3 times a year and we know a lot about them. I mean, they, you know, people go in their homes and ask them questions. We are only using the folks who are living in the community. So these are people who are not institutionalized. And we could only find them. We know we needed to look at this longitudinally. We could only find them longitudinally if they crossed years. So that they had to have crossed a year in order for us to find them. We were looking, the way we found the folks with cardiovascular illness was they either responded that they had this diagnosis, or we also had, as well as the survey data, we had all the Medicare claims that were associated with these people. Now, this is all before Medicare Part D, so at least it's standardized in that way. So the cardiovascular conditions that we were able to recognize were heart failure, coronary heart disease, myocardial infarction, angina, cardiomyopathy, cardiorhythmia, or other. This other does not include high blood pressure or atherosclerosis. So what we were looking for was evidence that they had gotten at least 2 prescriptions for cardiovascular medication. Now, this, again, it's before Part D, so we did not have claims data necessarily that we could associate, but they did a really good job in the survey. They had everybody save their medication, their medicine bottles and all receipts and everything, so we think it was, you know, okay, it's self-report, but it's a better self-report than most. Exposures we looked at were dementia status, and we found the people with dementia either by self-proxy report of a dementia diagnosis or ICD-9 codes of dementia or both. About half the people we found with dementia were only in claims, and about a quarter were only self-report, and about a quarter were only in, were both claims and self-report. And the race ethnicity in this group that was by self-report. So we looked at a bunch of everything else we could look at, which included gender and their educational level, how close they were to the federal poverty level, whether the information that we got in the survey was either from the person individually or a proxy for the person, where the diagnosis for dementia came from, and also the year. And our unit of analysis in this is person year, so we looked at everybody as long as they were there. Okay, so we were able to locate about 10,000 people that represented 26,000, 27,000 person years. And among those, about 1,300 had dementia, and about 8,900 didn't have dementia. Our sample was mostly non-Hispanic, right? And we didn't have enough in the other group to be able to separate them and look at them separately. So we don't think that other is terribly meaningful because it's too diverse, too much heterogeneity there. So unexpectedly, what we actually found was the people with dementia were getting more treatment than the people without dementia. And this surprised us very much. This is just the bivariate. This is the unadjusted. And that while whites were more likely to be treated than either of the other groups, that wasn't significant. So there are also major baseline differences if you're looking at the group with and without dementia, or if you're looking at the group by race ethnicity. Almost every factor was different except for whether or not they were treated. And if you're interested, we did post these tables on the website, APHA website. Okay, so our unadjusted, we ran a logistic regression model to predict treatment, and we got an odds ratio of 1.25. Then we adjusted for everything we could adjust for, and it hardly budged. And there was no interaction. We could not find any interaction. So these are our, this is our adjusted results. And as you can see, the actually not a lot is important, except for some reason proxy report. People with proxy reports seem to get treated less. This is the second half of the same table. I put dementia up there so you can see it. I'm sorry, this is a typo depression diagnosis. We did another parallel thing with depression, and somehow or another it crept into this. The word depression crept into this. So what we found out was that dementia status, but not race ethnicity, predicted whether somebody received treatment. And that after we adjusted for everything we could adjust for, it didn't change, or at least not much. So I did locate one other study that didn't find any difference in cardiovascular prescribing by dementia status, and this was long-term care residents. I'm not aware of any study that finds more treatment for people with dementia, but among a cohort that's just with depression and looking at depression treatment also found that the people with dementia were being treated more. And the way we've been able to understand this is several different things. And one is that these are community dwelling folks, which means that they probably aren't as severely demented as people who are institutionalized. And we think that maybe among this community dwelling group, that the folks with dementia have very well established relationships with their providers and therefore have more opportunity to be diagnosed and treated. So we have many limitations to this investigation. We had to cross people so we didn't get people who came and went. There's, of course, anytime you use claims data, there's a big potential for misclassification. And there was a paper that suggested when you look for dementia status that you are most likely to overestimate. So you're more likely to have people in the dementia group who might not belong there. And that those particular people, according to this particular paper, are folks that cost more. So that may be what's driving this. And we also had no way of telling. We could not match up a particular drug to a particular diagnosis. We were only looking at classes of drugs. And we don't have any information on off-label use. That may be another source for misclassification. So this work was supported by a grant that I got from internally. And we had help with the analysis from our friend at Indiana University, and this is the name of two of the pharmacy students that I worked with who helped us with our identification and classification for medications. Okay, that's it. Any?
Supervisor Ryder, just, you actually answered the question. I was going to ask
okay.
about the severity of dementia and mm-hmm. relationship. Has your group looked at those who have been institutionalized?
We didn't, and that's something we can go back and do because we have the information we have all the data, which means that we could go back and create a cohort of people who are institutionalized. It's going to be a much smaller group.
Sure, sure.
So, you know, things might get wookie fast. But,
well, I thought that was very interesting. I actually read the paper about the dementia patients getting less cardiovascular medication.
Uh-huh.
So for your team, what are the next steps? This is very interesting data.
Well, I'm still really interested in the antipsychotic folks, and I have to work this out with my postdoc place because they were looking at it when I left, and I find it very interesting that over-prescription of antipsychotics and under-prescriptions of antidepressants and similar prescriptions of cardiovascular drugs, I can't interpret that yet, but I find it very interesting.
I'll interpret it for you. It's called farm reps.
Yeah, could be.
Of course.
Yeah.
Does anybody have any questions about the writer? Thank you.